Welcome to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
an ongoing conversation
with ministry leaders
about embracing complexity
and uncertainty
with joy
and faithfulness.
Friends, this is Adam Borneman with the Ministry Collaborative, and as always, I'm happy to be with my friend and colleague, Katie Nakamura-Ringers in Birmingham. Katie, tell folks really quickly just your title and what you're up to in that neck of the woods.
Yeah, so I'm an Episcopal priest. I've served churches in Birmingham. I started a small faith community called the Abbey here. And my full-time work is I'm on the presiding bishop's staff in the church planting office. So I resource and maintain a coaching network and training and that kind of thing for people who are starting new faith communities across the country.
Katie, you're always one of my favorite conversation partners because you are willing to wade into the very complex questions, the very large questions that don't have good answers about ministry. But you're also on the ground doing really good ministry from my perspective in really concrete ways. And I think that combination is really valuable. So it's always good to have you on to talk about these sort of things. I want to start off by asking maybe one of those big questions, and that is, what do you think is the hardest thing for pastors, ministry leaders to talk about these days?
Oh, wow. That is a big question. So my husband is also an Episcopal priest, and he calls me a doomsday prepper because of the amounts of time I spend thinking about the decline of the Episcopal Church, the demise of mainline Christianity. I think partly like I'm somebody that I just enjoy change. Maybe I have a flair for the novel, which can be good and bad. I see those topics as exciting. I see the evolution of Christianity, of American Christianity, the Episcopal Church in particular, as being something that's really interesting and hopefully like moving towards something really beautiful. It also like involves a lot of deconstruction, but not just like intellectual deconstruction of our liturgy or our polity, but it affects people's lives.
Yes.
So it calls into questions people's livelihoods, particularly pastors, the meaning that they find in their work and the role that they play in the church and in our culture. I think that's something that's really difficult.
Yeah, I agree.
It's similar to when we talk about climate change and how we're going to address that. Hmm. It can become this intellectual exercise, but we have to remember that it really is about people and their lives and their sense of value and worth.
Yeah, I agree. I have the same sense for myself and for other colleagues that these are hard things to talk about just because they actually do have consequences. And sometimes it's hard to face consequences that, you know, so many of the institutions and systems that we are connected to or even deeply embedded in are struggling so much. And so I've become increasingly sympathetic about that, especially because I sense that so many well-intentioned, kind of ready-to-go people are still finding themselves in situations that don't allow them to really have that sort of freedom to do the things they want to do. At the same time, I get the sense that more and more my colleagues out there in conversation experience a great relief and almost a freedom when we say to each other, you know, it is possible that there's nothing you can do to fix it or address some of these challenges. Our friend Ben Johnston Crace, who's been on this podcast several times and is a great conversation partner, Ben is always saying, we have to disabuse ourselves of the notion that there is a toolbox and that there is any fixing of anything.
Right.
It's actually a much bigger, deeper soul level spiritual thing going on that we have to be honest about. And I think that that's a fearful thing, but also I think increasingly a very liberating thing for folks. I'm wondering, especially in your context of working with church planters and other people who are in alternative ministry contexts, how true is that? I mean, what are they experiencing as people who are on the edges of institutional life, but also having some opportunities to do some experimental things? What is their attitude about these sorts of topics?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the fix-it mindset, but then also the alternate mindset, which is creating innovation and something new from the margin. And I do sense that we are in this like liminal period where there are people who are trying both methods. And there's some contexts where both methods are not working and some contexts where both methods are. And I have colleagues that are still pretty wedded to that idea that if you, I'm exaggerating a little bit here, but like if you get all the typos out of the bulletin and you just like replace your old rotting church sign out in the front and you have something attractive and you fire the organist and bring on somebody better, that's going to save your church. It's going to grow your church. And there are some contexts where that's still working, or maybe there's some unhealth that really needs to be shaken out. And then I have colleagues, particularly in the church planting world, whose focus is less on sort of preparing that space of hospitality, but from the inside and more on the outside. Mm-hmm, I mean, mm-hmm. when we talk about we can't fix this, there's some pretty profound like religious shift, mm-hmm. cultural shift around religion that is not all the fault of the church. I think it's primarily not the fault of the church. It's just, it's where we are. And so their perspective is, how do I go out and meet that? Because they're not on the inside, that we're not seeing. How do I reach these folks with good news and community? Yeah.
And of course, the other reality there is that there's some sense in which we have been here before historically. I was revisiting the other day Robert Putnam's last book, The Upswing, and he makes a pretty compelling case, even about American religion, that in terms of religious affiliation and interest, we're not actually that far off from the late 1800s, the Gilded Age. Obviously, we're a very different world from then in so many ways. But in terms of just how people are connected to American religious life, it's by the numbers not that much different. And it's okay for us to kind of go through these ebbs and flows of things, and for us to just wonder theologically even about, what is God doing with this? What do we need to be paying attention to? I want to run an idea by you and get your thoughts. And I'm welcome for some criticism on this too, because I'm just sort of wrestling with it. I have gotten to the point where I've started saying most of our established inherited institutional churches, mainline churches especially, but even more broadly than that, most of them should probably stop talking about innovating. They should probably start talking about resourcing innovation. And what I mean by that is resourcing things that wouldn't be as closely tethered to their systems. Mm. That it really does have to be something that has its own innovation baked in from the beginning, that's not bound up with some of the things we've inherited. I think there's lots of exceptions to that, but not that many. And I'm wondering, how does that strike you with what you've seen among church planters and among established churches?
Yeah. In church planting, we use the word risk a good bit.
Yeah.
It's helpful in somebody who's starting a new ministry from scratch to be somebody that maybe even enjoys the act of taking risk, of like that uncertainty of not quite knowing like if something's going to succeed or fail. And again, sometimes I think more well-resourced churches can get caught up in the intellectual exercise of taking risk, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of like me as a fairly financially well-resourced person. Just in my personal life, I can intellectually take risk. But when I see friends, people I do ministry with who don't have as much resource, well, the risks that they take are often a lot bigger and a lot braver. And I think I see that with people who are ministry innovators, the risks that they're taking. I mean, the personal risk. I'm going to risk and see what happens if I go bivocational, or if I do something non-stipendiary, or I take a risk to plant a church or start a ministry that might come close to, you know, really messing up my career. Like, if I do this, if I take this job, I will no longer be on the upward moving ladder. And I see that more on the margin, or folks who are floating out there trying to reach new groups of people. I see it more in them than I see it in well-resourced places, just because the risk that they have to take to do some of that innovating, quote innovating, like you're saying, Adam, is so much less.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can see where you're going with that, that it can be more helpful for those larger congregations to resource the people who are actually out there taking deep risk.
Yeah, resource it. And also what I've seen with some colleagues recently is resource it and disabuse your folks of the notion that there's going to be some sort of return on investment here. Mm. I'm thinking of a larger congregation I know here in Atlanta with a really, really gifted pastor. And he's been really good at this in terms of pushing things out into the community and kind of sticking to his guns, saying, this is not going to turn into a bunch of new tithers. This is not going to turn into a capital campaign, because of the nature of the constituency they're trying to serve and that they believe they're led to serve. Mm-hmm. And he's taken some hits for that. He's lost folks over this.
Wow.
He's had to calculate that risk very carefully, and to his credit, has done really well calculating that risk. He kind of knows how to keep this thing going at a baseline that's tolerable. But I find that that's a very low number of congregations. And I find it's a really low number that have that capacity to do that sort of thing. And I don't say that out of judgment. I say it out of just naming reality.
Yeah. And the other piece of it is the feedback loop. I mean, we don't want to just resource innovation, but you want to figure out a way, how do we then like learn from it?
Oh, that's a great catch. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually invite those people who are out there taking the risks, innovating, to come back and tell us what they have found out on that journey.
Mm-hmm.
That requires some humility and some acknowledgement that even if I'm the pastor of a large, well-resourced place that has just rebounded fantastically after COVID, that in the main line, we're part of these interconnected web of systems. So, you know, an Episcopal church not doing so hot in like Denver, Colorado, eventually those patterns, those themes are going to work themselves back and affect us here in Birmingham and nationally and internationally. Kind of the humility to understand that we're more connected than we'd like to think that we are.
Yes. And along the same lines, not only the humility to realize that we're more connected than we think we are, but the necessity of engaging with that reality.
Yeah.
That the more homogenous and siloed we become, we only do so at our own demise.
Mm-hmm.
This is just no longer the world we live in. It turns out that Jesus is right.
No.
About the types of communities we engage in and create and nurture. And I wonder if this is not one of those apocalyptic moments where we're being forced to deal with that, mm-hmm. that we really have siloed ourselves off and it's really unhealthy for all of us.
I have spent 2023 working on a New Year's resolution to read the Bible in a year.
Oh, you're one of those people?
I'm one of those people. So I'm reading Acts, Romans, 1 Corinthians, and I realize how much I forget what a huge deal it was to shift from a church that's almost entirely Jewish to a church that is pushing out to the much broader Roman Empire and to the Gentiles. We don't talk about that.
I always found it astounding that when Paul asks, what is the mystery of the gospel? It's that Gentiles are not only included, but that the Spirit is showing up in them. That's the big mystery here, is that the Spirit is showing up among people where you didn't think it's possible.
Right.
It's not all the other things you think he might say. It's this one.
And because you and I are recipients of the Gentile church.
Right.
In everyday ministry, that gets lost on us.
Yeah, it does.
But it was huge and it was controversial and it was hard. It was challenging. And I wonder if we're going through something kind of like that.
Well, and that's a perfect way for me to raise this last big thing I wanted to raise. And that is, this is not new information, but it was kind of repeated again last week with the latest Pew surveys, which is a pretty astounding 7 out of 10 Americans have some inclination towards some sort of spirituality. It's very broad, and that was the purpose of the survey. So it can mean lots of different things, but just people who think that there's more to life beyond the material, concrete world they see in front of them.
Yeah.
7 out of 10. That's a huge number. And I'm left wondering, what is the response to that? We're just describing about naming the possibility that there's so much and so many people out there that God is reaching toward. And I'm wondering, how do we participate that? And why do we so frequently seem so misaligned for this reality that we're in?
Mm-hmm. I mean, a shift that I find myself having to make. I'm in the Bible Belt. We still pretend that Southern Christendom is going strong around here. But I have this Sunday morning running group. My church meets in the afternoon. So I go out with this running group on Sunday mornings, and every single one of them would say that they are spiritual people.
Right.
They love to talk about God. They love it. We'll talk about God on our runs. Sometimes they'll let me tell them, you know, about read the Bible in a year, like what I'm discovering, laws of Deuteronomy. In fact, they call themselves a church. They call themselves the Church of Don't Be a Jerk.
Mm.
But there's no neural connection. There's no synapse firing. There's no idea that being a spiritual person means that you would go explore that spirituality in a church.
Right.
Or go like honor that spirituality by going to church on Sunday. Like that bridge is non-existent. And I think that that's part of this reality that we have to figure out how to face. And is it about insisting on the value of like going to church as a way of exploring your spirituality? Is it about taking church out to where the people are? Is it, as they talk about in the book that just came out, The Great Dechurching, you start by inviting people into your lives, like to share life and then to church, or, you know, something in the middle of all those things. I haven't figured that out, but it's something we're wrestling with.
I've continually been struck by the fact that actually, not just in the Gospels, but the prophets too, seem to name pretty clearly for us that how we walk with each other in our communities day to day is actually a lot more fundamental than how we are gathering together on specific times. Mm. And honestly, compared to the prophets, the way I just put it is really generous and gracious. They are pretty hardcore about this problem, that we think that because we've gathered together in a specific way, that that is the thing to which we are all called to do, period. And the prophets say, you have it exactly backwards. Mm-hmm. There is a way of life. There is a way of practicing justice and righteousness that's a participation in what God's Spirit is doing that actually has to happen. And without that, without kind of your running group, the Church of Don't Be a Jerk, without spaces like that, our gatherings are an abomination. That they are, in fact, something that God is not pleased with. I see it as kind of an exciting, promising time to kind of even think theologically about how we pursue those things.
One last thing I might say is that when we discern folks for church planting and missional work, one of the questions we ask them is, how many friends do you have outside of the church?
Yep.
And often, sometimes like the answer is zero. So just that act of spend some time outside of the office, but not just outside of the office, spend some time with people who are not part of the church without the expectation that you're inviting them to Sunday worship at 9 a.m. Be curious about what's going on, how the Holy Spirit is moving, how our culture is moving, and be curious about people. Be curious about people in their lives, their own personal churches of Don't Be a Jerk. Where are they exploring? What are they doing? How are they living?
Katie, thanks so much. I hope we can do this again sometime soon.
Me too.
Thank you for listening to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
a project of the Macedonian Ministry Foundation.
The Ministry Collaborative nurtures a national network
of pastors and congregations committed to faithful,
creative,
and courageous engagement in their communities.
Our producer is Marthane Sanders.
To find out more about our work of cultivating leadership that makes a difference
in congregations and communities,
visit our website
at www.ministrycollaborative.org.